Crosswires, navigating news with faith with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Crosswires, today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens, from a layman's questions and a clergyman's reaction. Now, here's Chris and Father Daniel.
Hey, Chris, I see that you're not participating in the spirit of November.
You mean the no-shave November?
Yeah, you don't have a beard or a mustache.
Well, because my beard and mustache, while full, makes me look like Santa Claus. It's completely snow white.
Hey, that would be a great preparation for Christmas, and we're only a month and a half away.
I've done it before, but it makes me look like I'm 70 years old.
Okay, well, that would make you look very noble and dignified, so you should think about it.
Yeah, maybe I should try to aim for noble and dignified.
Yeah, well, let's get into our topics for today.
Yeah, in the meantime,
what do you have for us?
We're going to talk about AI porn.
Okay.
So, you know who Sam Altman is? The CEO of ChatGPT, owner AI, OpenAI is the name of the company. So they recently announced that the ChatGPT software would soon allow users to generate AI porn.
That's a really bad idea.
Well, so AI generated content will seemingly stress test at least one of the Christian arguments against porn, i.e. that, quote, this is somebody's child,
right?
You're viewing and objectifying. So in reality, to me, this seems no different than like anime porn, right? Where you're drawing cartoons of pornography.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your thoughts just generally about AI? You already said it, AI porn bad, but any other further thoughts?
Yeah, I think we have to recognize that pornography doesn't just hurt the people who are objectified. It hurts the users. And I think that's the real problem. That is it's an interesting contrast in American society because we put a lot of emphasis on free speech. And a lot of the defense of pornography over the years has been saying, no, we can't take away people's freedom to choose these bad things. Well, they wouldn't say that they're bad in their arguments. But we know that they're bad. We know that they hurt the users. It creates addictions. It desensitizes them to the dignity of other human beings, leads them into ever greater levels of pornography, more and more graphic, more and more violent, because you've got to get more and more of the dopamine to get the same stimulus of the addiction. So we know that there's documented terrible side effects for the users. And I think that the generation of AI porn is just going to make that argument all the stronger.
All right, but that sounds like you're talking about something like tobacco, where you know it's bad for you, but you know you're still free to do it.
Yes, you are. And I think that what we've done as a society is we have vilified smoking tobacco to the point we've almost exterminated it from U.S. Culture. And you go to other countries and they still smoke a lot. But in the United States, I mean, people think it's fine to look at pornography, but it's a horrible public sin to smoke a cigarette. So why can't we do something similar as a society for pornography? And through education of the real negative and the detrimental effects that it has on individuals and on a society as a whole, why can we not make a societal case like we should get rid of this? It's actually much worse than smoking a cigarette for the individual and for society as a whole.
Well, I do find it interesting. A couple episodes ago, you kind of mentioned that in a provocative way that maybe we should destigmatize smoking again. So that maybe you're smoking tobacco rather than smoking marijuana,
right?
Which is far, less hurtful to you and society, the tobacco is not the marijuana. So I do find that interesting.
It's more addictive,
because
actually,
it's more addictive,
but it's less detrimental in some respects
to society as a whole,
right?
Right, and so kind of giving folks an out to do something a little bit, for lack of a better word, devious. Kind of satisfies that fixation. But back to AI generated porn. So because it does not involve the exploitation of another, is it somehow less grave a sin than
it takes away one dimension of the sin? Yes, because you're no longer objectifying or using or destroying the dignity of individuals who are involved in the production of the pornography. In that sense, yes. But it doesn't take away the detrimental effects for the individuals who are the users and society, and the danger that pornography will lead to acting out on real people.
So is it still considered a grave?
Yes, definitely.
And if it's grave, it's grave. It's not like there's any need for degrees.
That's right.
Crossed Wires.
If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Scientists from the Oregon Health and Science University have transformed human skin cells into 82 eggs that were fertilized with a sperm in a lab, with sperms, multiple, in the lab, resulting in 7 early-stage embryos called zygotes. Okay, so these early-stage...
What happened to the other ones?
They didn't successfully... fertilize.
So 7 of these...
7 of the 82.
These, okay, got it.
So this early stage technique reprograms ordinary skin cells into a flexible state, allowing them to develop into any cell type in the body, including egg cells.
Mm-hmm.
So what this might mean is women who have no viable eggs of their own could now conceive, and even, oddly, think about this, men could use a skin cell to create an egg to be fertilized with their own sperm.
Mm.
Okay, so in this case, the male, the resulting embryo, the DNA would come entirely from the man.
Right.
But it wouldn't be a clone because there would be a scrambled version of the gene set.
Mm-hmm.
On multiple levels, how is this wrong?
Hmm. This is a very, very interesting concept. I'd have to think it over a lot more. I mean, because, you know, as we always do, Chris, this is thrown at me without any previous looking at the subject matter.
Well, just first of all, let's deal with what's now possible, asexual reproduction in humans, which we see in other species.
Sure. I think the first problem is recognizing, and this is a big problem with the whole IVF industry to begin with, because you're not respecting the dignity of the human being that comes out of the process. You're turning them into a product rather than a human being that comes from the love of a man and a woman and the procreative act with God's creative power. So I think that's a first issue we'd have to look at in this case. We're not respecting the dignity of a potential human being that could grow out of this. Now, that's still a hypothetical, because oftentimes when they've done these tests in the past, there's so many genetic problems with the resulting embryo that it dies before it comes to term. And so there is no human life that's there. So it seems like it's a fertilized embryo that could be a human being. But it's, you know, that's still from a scientific standpoint to be proven.
Right.
They haven't brought these embryos to term, at least from what I'm understanding. So that would be interesting to see, at least from a scientific standpoint, if it does come about. From a moral standpoint, it's very problematic, because you're not respecting the dignity of a human being and turning it again into a product of a scientific process.
Well, and aren't we just, I mean, accelerating our attempts to be God? In, you know, the possibility of, like I said, a man using his own skin cells to create another version of himself entirely with his own DNA.
A bit of narcissism implied in that, too.
It seems like, you know, we're racing towards God saying, you know what, forget about it. I'm going to go ahead and do another flood.
Well, I hope not. I was in a flood recently, and it's a scary prospect. But, you know, coming back to your topic, definitely there's some moral questions that,
I mean,
that
we are messing
very
with
much
stuff
there.
That, right, is just seems awfully ethically dangerous, and we're doing it, you know, without any regard for consequence.
Yeah, but I wonder from a different standpoint. Let's say hypothetically, and again, I'm putting on my thinking cap here. Let's say that hypothetically, there is a woman who is not able to produce her own eggs because of whatever malady that she's had, and let's say that the doctors help her to produce an egg using her own modified skin cells. And then they put that egg within her ovaries, and then goes through the natural process. She has sexual relations with her husband, and then is able to conceive a child.
Okay, so this would be something that would be morally permissible.
Yes, it would.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, science is really fascinating in this realm. And sometimes people think, oh, the Catholic Church is just shutting things down. But there are ways in which science can aid the reproductive process, which is maintaining the dignity of the individuals involved and of the union of the spouses. And there's no problem with that.
Crossed Wires.
If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crossed Wires.
Seeming never-ending race to the bottom of stupidity, the Minnesota Supreme Court has ruled that USA Powerlifting violated the State Human Rights Act in barring a biological male who transitioned to a female from a weightlifting, from a female weightlifting competition.
Hmm.
So the male athletes in female sports trend is, you know, exploring, in my mind, the corners of insanity as men with clear biological advantages compete unfairly against women in an increasing number of sports. Well, I think it's all insane. I think there are varying levels of insanity here. Mm-hmm. So I would like to put these things in reverse and think about a biological female entering competitions against men. I'd put on one end of the spectrum, golf.
Okay.
Okay. So Babe Didrikson, if you heard of her, you know, from the, I think she's in the 40s and 50s.
No, I haven't.
Okay. Well, she was the first woman to compete in a male PGA Tour event.
How'd she do?
She made the cut twice.
Oh, that's great.
So more recently, Michelle Wee and Annika Sorenstam,
mm-hmm.
they competed in PGA events, though neither of them ever made the cut. But
right.
it was not inconceivable that they would.
Sure.
In the middle, I would put sports like running, where the gap is huge in sprinting,
right.
middle and even long distances, but women can actually outcompete men in extreme distances like 100-mile ultra marathons.
Hmm. Interesting.
On the other end of the spectrum, I've got to put weightlifting. So no female weightlifter has ever outlifted a top male weightlifter. The
right.
strongest men lift significantly more than the strongest women across every weight class.
Right.
Even the heaviest, strongest woman in history lifts about 175 to 200 pounds less than the strongest men per lift.
Wow.
What are your thoughts here?
It's just so obvious, Chris.
Isn't it?
I don't even know what to say. I mean, when we as a society have gotten so detached from reality that we want to create these alternate realities, which are so divorced from science and statistics, it's like, what do you even say? I mean, go live in La La Land if you want. But I mean, if we want to live in reality, the science and the statistics are what they are. And that's what like really boggles the mind, because a lot of these people who are ideologically want this sort of equality or transgenders participating in other sports, they purport to be in science-based, or say, and put signs in their yard, say that I believe in science. Well, what science are they talking about? Bogus science that says that there's more than two genders. I mean, this is ridiculous, Chris. And I think as a society, we need to come back to kind of some degree of sanity.
Well, it's almost like, I mean, you're what, 6'3", 6'4"?
Just under 6'3".
Yeah.
6'2 and 5'8". Got to get the 5'8" part because I'm 1/16th of an inch taller than my older brother.
Okay, there you go. Well, it'd be like putting you in a height contest with, you remember Tattoo from Fantasy Island?
No.
All right, well.
Sorry, anything you ask me about pop culture, I'm not going to know much,
well,
Chris.
Tattoo was a, what was he? He wasn't a dwarf, he was... Whatever. He was probably 3-4 feet tall. So,
okay.
You know, but he could identify as a 7-footer and therefore in a height contest, he would win. I mean, it's just insanity. So what I'd actually like to see on this front, I think what might move the needle here is something like a good but not great high school male basketball player mm-hmm. identifying as a female and then going to play in the WNBA where mm-hmm. the upper half of the league. The salary would get you something around $250,000 a year. So if you're not going to make it in even, you know, a D3 college, but you could go and make a couple hundred grand a mm-hmm. year, I mean, why not? I think it might start to, like, expose the insanity.
Yeah. Huh.
I mean, I remember I played basketball growing up, and in college I would go play pickup basketball against she was then the top female basketball player in the country for mm-hmm. University of Texas. Her name was Clarissa Davis. We played pickup basketball against her.
Sure.
She was a phenomenal female athlete. She could hold no court on the basketball court against the guys. I mean, it was just not a comparison.
And you weren't even guys who were playing on the college team.
Right.
You were just pickup.
Right.
Intramural.
Right. And right. I also think about my son's girlfriend, their team won the D1 national championship in soccer.
Mm-hmm.
But then they got beat by a team of 13-year-old boys, a state club team of 13-year-old boys.
Right.
So it's just ridiculous.
It is. Yeah. And I think that's why, you know, whenever you have these sort of ridiculous setups and the just, you know, just discordance between reality and what people's ideas are, there's usually an ideology at play. There's a sort of a mindset that blinds people to what's really going on, and they've got to reshape reality to fit into the categories that they have pre-established. And I don't think that's a good way to live. I think we should always be looking at the facts. We need to be looking at reality. And then, you know, if a theory is not matching up with reality, don't change reality. Change your theory. Your theory is bunk.
Well, I can't think of a, you know, anything that would go further into the ridiculousness than weightlifting. I'm not sure where else we're going to, you know.
Well, you know, as a funny side fact that you mentioned powerlifting in Minnesota. My cousin is a power lifter in Minnesota, and I was just looking up a picture of him, and he's totally ripped. He was a wrestling star through high school, and won the state championship twice, and then wrestled for Iowa State. And he works in a clinic now, and he does powerlifting. And you know, I'm looking at this picture of him,
and he was born a male.
Oh yeah, of course, and he's still very much a male, and he's, you know, there's no woman that would compare. And he's a little shrimp. He's like 5'4", but he can outlift me probably by like 350 pounds.
Crossed Wires.
If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires.
The inaugural enhanced games consisting of track and field, short course swimming, and weightlifting events will debut in May of 2026.
Okay.
The enhanced games will be a free-for-all version of the Olympics with performance-enhancing drugs and illegal buoyancy-enhancing swimsuits allowed.
And following on our last topic, can guys participate against women?
Well, if they're, I guess enhanced, if they sign up.
Right?
Yeah, sure. I guess so. So, of course, naturally, this competition is going to take place where?
California?
Las Vegas.
Oh, okay.
So, what do you think about exploring the limits of human athletic performance unencumbered by the rules?
It's an interesting concept. I mean, again, you're springing these topics on me, so I don't have a chance to think about it beforehand. But I think you have to look at the side effects. If they're taking enhancing, performance enhancing drugs, are those going to have long term negative effects on their body? If so, we got a moral problem there. Other than that, I think, you know, it's interesting. Athletes have always kind of pushed the edge to see what they can do more of. And it just brings back to my mind kind of the mentality of the pane circo from the Latins and from the Romans back in ancient times when society was decaying. And people just wanted more and more entertainment, yep. Things that would push the edge, do things a little bit differently, something more radical and wild. And is that reflective of us as society here in the United States?
Well, I
right
got to tell you, I mean, I know, you know, like taking steroids is detrimental to your health.
Yeah, right.
But if this was on TV and they were doing the 100 meter dash, I think I'd tune in to see just how fast they're going to go. So I think it is stupid, but it is, enticing.
Yeah. And I think there's always a good element of, the sparring, the trying new things, the sport. There's something noble. There's something good about sports. There's nothing wrong with sports inherently. And developing new sports or a new type of competition in and of itself is not problematic. And it's an expression of our humanity.
All right. Well, so in that vein, what I would like to see is more human versus animal competitions. So
give me an example.
All right. So 100 meter dash between a warthog. Hang on. I'm going to give you the four contestants here. A warthog, a southern dart butterfly, Usain Bolt, and a domestic cat. Who wins? 100 meter dash.
100
warthog,
meter dash.
Southern dart butterfly, Usain Bolt, domestic cat.
Well, if you could keep the butterfly on a straight line, that's the big question.
Well, you're on the right track. Your southern dart butterfly goes 37 miles per hour. Usain Bolt, 27.8 miles per hour. The warthog would come in second, by the way,
that's
at 30 miles
thinking.
30
yeah.
miles per hour, tying the domestic cat, 30 miles per hour.
Wow. So, okay.
Top performer in the category not mentioned, though, the peregrine falcon at 184 miles per hour.
Yeah, but that's only when it's going down.
Okay, but nonetheless.
I mean, Usain Bolt, if he fell out of an airplane, he would hit terminal velocity. So he would actually be faster than the peregrine falcon.
What about a 100 meter freestyle swim. All right, so okay, the contestants are a gray whale, a water strider bug, an emperor penguin, and Eamon Sullivan, the Australian who set the fastest 100 meter freestyle time at the Beijing Olympics.
I would have to guess the whale.
Very good. The whale at 5 miles per hour. Okay. Coming in second is Eamon Sullivan at 4.7 miles per hour.
Wow. Yes. He's fast.
Following him in third place, podium. He's on the podium with a bronze. This is the emperor penguin.
Okay.
And then shut out of anything is the water strider bug at 3.3 miles per hour.
I figured he's too small.
Just all right. Couldn't. Top performer in the category not mentioned is what?
No idea.
Sailfish. 68 miles per hour.
No way.
68 miles per hour underwater.
68 underwater.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Wow. That's a lot of power. All right. Well, these unusual games are definitely pushing the limits, Chris.
Well, Jesse Owens raced against horses after the Olympics to earn money.
Did he really?
That was a thing? Yeah, that was a thing.
Did he win?
I don't know. He made money, though.
Crossed Wires.
If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Surgeons removed a genetically modified pig kidney from a 67-year-old American man who lived with it for a record 271 days before it started failing.
Okay.
The pig donor was gene edited with what's called CRISPR technology to make the organ compatible with the human body.
Mm-hmm.
Given that global demand for transports is greater than supply, successful cross-species transplantation could be crucial to bridging the gap until a human donor becomes available.
Right.
So any thoughts on this?
And this is a topic that the church has actually addressed already in some of its teachings on bioethics. And in this case, if an organ is not something that is identifier of the human person, for example, your reproductive organs or your brain, it's fine to use animal organs as a potential replacement in this case. So there's really no moral qualms. And this is a great example of how the church embraces the use of science to help human life to flourish.
Right.
And the church is not anti-science in any way, shape, or form. And in this case, there wouldn't be any moral qualms about that.
So if you're moving away from reproductive organs, are there any other organs that would be problematic, ethically speaking, from the church's standpoint? Obviously, you wouldn't be able to transplant somebody's brain, right, with an animal brain or some other.
Not currently, but let's say that in the future, science is able to, you know, make all the necessary connections in order to transplant a brain. Yes, there would be moral concerns about that.
Okay.
Because the brain is generally connected more to the operations of the mind and of the.
What if it was a part of the brain? Let's say you had the ability to, for an Alzheimer's patient, to implant into somebody the portion of an animal brain that was responsible for short-term memory?
That's a good question, and we'd have to look at it a little more deeper, because there's certainly there's parts of the brain that are attached just to motor function, then that would be less tied to the identity of the person. It's just like, okay, control of your extremities and moving around or the beating of your heart. I don't think there would be a problem with that part of the brain. But then again, there's so many things we're still discovering in scientific discovery about how the brain functions, how the parts are linked together, how memories are attached to different parts of the brain. So there, I think there's still realm for discovery, which will then have ramifications from a moral standpoint.
All right. But outside of the brain or reproductive organs, really, there wouldn't be anything.
No, I can't think of any others.
I can't think of anything else either.
Yeah, like your lungs, your heart, you know, all those internal organs, they're not so much tied to the identity of the human person.
Crossed Wires.
If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crossed Wires.
Democratic Socialist Zohran Mamdani has been elected the mayor of the largest city in the United States, New York City, mm-hmm. as we all know. So New York City is not only the largest Jewish population in the United States, but it's actually got the largest Jewish population of any city in the world.
Really? More than Tel Aviv?
Yes.
Interesting.
So what do you think of a city electing a mayor, a city with such a large Jewish population, electing a mayor who, among other things, has, you know, promised to globalize the Intifada?
Yeah, it's a really interesting case study. And, you know, I've read a number of articles about the situation, but I don't purport to be an expert. But I think that there is definitely an interesting case study of how he has risen as a politician. I read his acceptance speech after he won the election. Huge turnout, over 2 million people, the largest turnout in voter history since 1969 in New York City, which is really significant. And his acceptance speech was interesting, you know, some of the things he was talking about. He's clearly an eloquent speaker who touches on buttons that resonate with people. You know, as a New Yorker, he grew up in New York, and so he understands the culture. He tends to be pretty blunt and direct, and, you know,
not born there. He was born in Uganda.
Yeah. Yeah. But he's lived most of his life there. And, you know, and he was in his speech, he was challenging Trump, and that resonates with certain people.
Right.
So I can see how he got to some prominence there in New York City. But from the angle of, how is a Muslim going to govern well a large Jewish population? That'll be a really interesting question.
I mean, it's starting to sound a little bit like London.
Yeah, in some ways. Yeah, London went through something similar where they elected a Muslim mayor. And, you know, some pundits are talking about how the nature of the office itself will limit what he can do, because he's made these kind of bold claims that he's going to set up these, supermarkets that are free and or reduce costs and things like that, and control rents and typical socialist policies, which usually don't work. One case where they have worked, and it'd be interesting to see. Right. But I've never seen a case where they actually work. But they play upon simplistic solutions for society. I think the constraints of the office itself may limit what he's able to do. But it'll be interesting to watch. Unfortunately, it's not just a test in a petri dish. It's a test with 20 million people living in New York City.
Yeah. What I find interesting is that the New York, this probably was deeply influenced by the large population of younger, under 30 voters.
Without a doubt.
And how none of those voters would have been folks who lived through socialism or the really oppressive effects of communism that the over 40 and 50 crowd knew from the former Soviet Union.
Right.
Right. And so it seems like in history, you always have to learn the lesson all over again.
Unfortunately, that's oftentimes the case.
If there's a topic you'd like Father Daniel to address, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week with a different take on the news.
This has been Crosswires, navigating news with faith, with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens on AM 1160, The Quest.